We want our children to have the best chance to live fulfilling lives. But can you keep up with all the books and scientific research on parenting and fit the information into your own philosophy on how to raise kids? Welcome to Your Parenting Mojo, the podcast that does the work for you by investigating and examining respectful, research-based parenting tools to help kids thrive. Now, welcome your host, Jen Lumenlon.
Hello and welcome to Your Parenting Mojo. Today's episode is called How Do I Get My Children to Do What I Want Them to Do? Which, if you've been listening for a while now, you might guess is a bit of a tongue-in-cheek title. But let me explain. This episode actually grew out of an assignment for my master's program. I'm in the middle of a class on child psychology, which is really at the heart of the curriculum for the master's in psychology with a focus on child development. We were presented with a case study for a child called Jeremiah, whose mother was at the end of her rope in dealing with him because he basically refused to cooperate with her. He was having problems in school as well, and I was tasked with writing a guide for his mother that would help her to address some of his challenges. I've been reading two books that helped me with this assignment. The first is Unconditional Parenting by Alfie Cohn, who also wrote the book Punished by Rewards that was the basis of the episode on not saying good job. The blurb on the back of Unconditional Parenting starts out, "Most parenting guides begin with the question, how can we get kids to do what they're told, and then proceed to offer various techniques for controlling them? In this truly groundbreaking book, nationally respected educator Alfie Cohn begins instead by asking, what do kids need and how can we meet those needs? What follows from that question are ideas for working with children rather than doing things to them." So I read Unconditional Parenting a while ago, and I've been looking for an excuse to delve into the research behind it, so this seemed to be about as good of an offer as I was going to get. But I have on my nightstand at the moment the provocatively titled book, Do Parents Matter? Which is sort of like David Lancey's book, The Anthropology of Childhood, that I've quoted many times on this show, except that the authors actually lived in the communities and did a lot of the research themselves that the book cites, whereas Lancey's book cites a lot of other anthropologists' work. At various points in Do Parents Matter, very young children in some African and Central American cultures are described as being highly cooperative and even obedient. They can and will sit quietly through long church services or car rides. They entertain their siblings rather than squabbling with them, and they make valuable contributions to the running of a household. And I started to think about how to marry these two lines of inquiry together. What is it that parents in other cultures are doing to get their kids to cooperate in learning and in life? And are some of these things the kinds of activities that we should consider doing to get our own kids to cooperate more? Or is the key really focusing on the child's needs, like Alfie Cohn suggests? So let's start with the research on children in other cultures. Sarah and Robert Levine spent 2 years studying how the Gusii people in Kenya take care of their infants and compared these relationships with middle-class American mothers in Boston. The Gusii mothers would spend a lot of time soothing their babies. Mother and baby were in close bodily contact for much of the day, or if the mothers weren't available, then siblings were holding the baby. The mothers responded very quickly to a distressed cry, often by offering to breastfeed. And the Levines actually showed some Gusii mothers a video of an American baby crying while having his diaper changed, and the Gusii mothers were shocked that anyone would let a baby cry for even a few seconds. The Gusii mothers rarely let their infants cry long enough to become aroused, and being in constant touch with another person and feeding as soon as they fuss also helped to keep the baby calm. The Gusii mothers didn't use toys or other objects to play with their baby, and would turn the baby away from them so the baby couldn't make eye contact if they thought the baby was getting too excited, and so it would calm down again. The average Gusii mother has 10 children, so another one is probably on the way in a couple of years. So the Gusii mothers want a calm infant and a compliant child. And this continual soothing of the baby helps to set the stage for a toddler who prioritizes his mother's wishes and doesn't give her as much trouble. Of course, you can also take the opposite approach like Chinese parents, as these mothers combine what Westerners might call fairly severe parental authority with love. If you love your child, then you want to train him for the 7 Confucian learning values, which are sincerity, diligence, endurance of hardship, perseverance, concentration, respect for teachers, and humility. Chinese parents consider the child's school performance as part of their development as a moral person, and their parents teach them that they must and will be diligent in their schoolwork. They criticize their children without worrying about the child's self-esteem, because self-esteem is less important than being a diligent student. So I think the key point in all of this is that it's possible to use a variety of methods to create a child who does exactly what he's told. You can keep him calm all the time by being in constant contact with him and not playing with him in an American sense of using toys to interact with him. You can directly instruct the child on the qualities you think are important and berate them if they don't measure up. You can threaten to beat them or actually beat them if they don't do what you say. There are plenty of cultures where this happens, although I'll go on the record and say I'm against it in the kinds of Western cultures of which I'm a member. But it seems as though the one thing you can't do is to raise a child to think for himself, to be independent, to take the initiative, to be self-confident, and to think creatively, to talk from an early age. All typical goals of American parents. You can't raise a child to be all of those things and obey your every word. The two just don't seem to go together. Now, as an aside here, I will say that I've yet to find information in a book or a paper on parenting practices in non-Western cultures that describes the mental health outcomes of the children who were in constant physical contact, but otherwise visually and verbally essentially ignored, or who are berated or are threatened or beaten. It's certainly possible that not all of these lead to negative mental health outcomes in children in cultures where these practices do occur, but I do wonder how many of them do. And secondly, I wonder what the relationship between the child and the parent is like when the child gets older. If the primary goal is obedience to the parent, then as long as the child is obedient, then everything is probably fine from the parent's perspective. But I'm not so sure how it feels from the child's perspective. So in Western cultures, we tend to try to ensure two outcomes when we parent: the positive mental health of our children and a positive relationship between the child and the parent. And if we're to meet our goals for developing what we consider to be well-adjusted children who grow into well-adjusted adults who have a good relationship with us in our Western society, then we need to do two things. Firstly, we need to redefine our expectations regarding getting a child to do what we want him to do, because an inherent part of raising a free thinker is they don't always do what you want them to do. And secondly, we need a different toolkit than the people and cultures who create compliant children through keeping them calm or berating them. We need to move beyond thinking about getting our children to do what we want them to do and start thinking about how we create the kind of relationship with them that makes them want to be in a positive working relationship with us as we go out on this journey of life. So why don't we just control our children? Why don't we just tell them what we want them to do and force them to do it? Diana Boehmrind is a psychologist who described three different types of parenting styles way back in 1978 and really formed the bedrock of research on how parents interact with their children. She described three different kinds of parenting approaches.
And before I tell you more about those styles, I want to acknowledge that when I first recorded this episode several years ago, I mixed up the names of two of the parenting styles, authoritative and authoritarian. I mean, seriously, couldn't Dr. Boehmrind have come up with some better differentiated words to make them easier to remember? I'm looking at a definition right now, and authoritarian parents are the kind who are strict and not responsive to their children's needs. Authoritative parents have a high demand for control and are also somewhat responsive to their child's needs. So if you hear me say authoritarian and authoritative, and it sounds like those words were recorded separately and edited in, then you would be right, they were. And while I'm here, I also wanted to point out that when I recorded this episode, the podcast was much newer, and like pretty much else who describes these parenting styles, I just accepted what Diana Boehmrind says about authoritative parents are the best kind, and then looked at the research showing that. I never thought to question the framework itself, and that maybe authoritative parenting isn't the best kind. But when I was researching episode 148 on whether spanking is really so bad, I stumbled on a paper arguing that spanking, with loving intention for the child, really isn't very bad. And one of the co-authors on that paper was none other than Dr. Diana Boehmrind. I subsequently found a paper where she said that she didn't think that parents could do authoritative parenting right, and remember, that's the good kind of parenting, without spanking their child. I hope you get something useful out of this episode, and you may also want to go back and check out episode 154 called Authoritative Isn't the Best Parenting Style, which I put together after I found all of this research connecting Dr. Boehmrind with spanking, and where I concluded, much like the episode title says, that authoritative parenting was a child of its time, and we've moved on, and our approach to parenting should move on as well. Authoritative
parents foster individuality, self-regulation, and self-assertion by meeting and responding to their children's needs, and exert a fairly high level of control over the children to integrate them into the family culture. In white Western cultures, authoritarian parents are generally considered to be the good kind of parents. Parents who exert a lot of control but don't balance it with meeting and responding to their children's needs are called
authoritarian.
Because I always have to look it up to remember which is which, I'll restate those two.
Authoritative
parents are the good ones that exert a high degree of control but are also responsive.
Authoritarian
parents exert a high degree of control but are not responsive.
Authoritarian
parenting is more common in the African American community in the US. And while it has been shown to cause negative effects on white children, that's actually not necessarily the case with African American children. Authoritarian parenting is associated with better outcomes for African American children, but the authoritative style isn't terrible like it is for white children. And finally, the third style is a permissive parenting style that's linked to a high degree of responsiveness to the child, but a low degree of control. So the child gets what she wants and doesn't have to fit in with the rest of the family. In fact, the rest of the family fits around her. A fourth style was added later by some other researchers who noticed that low responsiveness and low control are basically elements of neglectful parenting. So Alfie Cohen, the author of Unconditional Parenting, cites a number of studies that link
authoritarian
parenting, the bad kind, with really negative psychological outcomes. And several more studies have been done since his book was published that essentially find the same thing. A really early study from way back in 1948 noticed that when parents control children and don't allow children any kind of say in how rules are made or who does what and when, then we get a quiet, well-behaved, non-resistant child. The paper goes on to say that conformity to cultural demands is not easily obtained without robbing the child of that personal integrity, which gives him a mind of his own. Very controlling parenting obtains conformity, but at the expense of personal freedom in areas which are not intended to be restricted. Another of the studies that Cohen cites makes a distinction that I found really helpful, and that's the difference between self-assertion and defiance. If a parent tells a child to pick up some toys and put them in a box and the child says, "No, still playing," then he's asserting himself. But if he takes more toys out of the basket or if he throws a toy across the room, he's defying her. So if the act is primarily geared toward resisting what the mother wants him to do, we call it defiance. But if the child really does want to keep playing, not just for the sake of defying the parent, then that's assertion. Now, this is important because researchers associate self-assertion with competence in young children, but the same doesn't hold true for defiance. Children who assert themselves by saying no more often are more likely to have a secure attachment to their parents, engage in more negotiation with their parents, and are more developmentally advanced than other children. Children who are defiant often have parents who use highly power-assertive control strategies like anger, harshness, criticism, and spanking or hitting, and the mother's use of these strategies after the child's initial no was more likely than other strategies to result in defiance, probably because she's using these strategies to signal she's not willing to negotiate. If the child complies at that point, he does so because his mother has more power than him and his autonomy suffers. And asking a child, "Could you pick up the toys now?" wasn't effective at getting compliance either, because the child feels like he has a choice and he chooses not to pick up the toys. I have to say, when I started researching this episode, that I didn't realize where it was going to end up, which is pretty much directly supporting the Resources for Infant Educarers, or RAI, approach to parenting that I use. I haven't talked about that too much on this podcast because I haven't been able to find much information to say that its strategies are supported by science. I used it myself because it advocates for respect in the relationship between the parent and the child, and that just felt very right to me. But while there's no research out there that says RAI parenting methods produce better children than non-RAI methods, it's pretty interesting to me to see strategies that RAI has taught me described in a paper on methods of developing mutually beneficial relationships in which the child mostly complies with the mother. I'll quote from the paper. "Mothers who were effective at eliciting compliance from their children and deflecting defiance were very clear about what they wanted, but in addition to listening to their children's objections, they also accommodated them in ways that conveyed respect for the children's autonomy and individuality. Often the process of obtaining compliance was quite extended. The mothers reasoned, persuaded, suggested, and adapted their requests to what they thought the child would accept. In doing so, they encouraged competent behavior on the part of their toddler." So if you want to hear all this in action, I would go and check out Janet Lansbury's podcast episode on setting limits with respect. There's a link to it in the references for this episode. Janet's been a RAI parent educator since 1994, and she's had a long-running blog as well. But I find it really helpful not to just read the language she uses, but to hear her demonstrate it on the podcast. She uses a lot of tactics like suggesting and reasoning and adapting requests. But at the end of the day, she's not afraid to set a limit and to act on that limit when it's needed. I do want to be super clear here that respecting autonomy and individuality does not mean being a pushover. I think of it as believing that I have rights as a person in the parenting relationship as well. And I place primary importance on the relationship between my daughter and me, and that it's okay for each of us to have boundaries about what's okay and what isn't okay in that relationship. Sometimes my daughter doesn't want to kiss me goodbye in the morning, and that's okay with me. That's her boundary. That's her limit in the moment. And I'll cheerfully wave goodbye to her as her dad takes her to daycare and think nothing more of it. And I also have the right to set boundaries as well. I don't want there to be water all over the floor in the bathroom after her bath. If she's splashing a lot, then I tell her, I don't want you to splash water on the floor. You can splash it up against the wall if you like. If she keeps splashing it on the floor, I say, Karis, the water still keeps going on the floor. You can stop splashing or splash against the wall if you want to keep doing it. If any more water goes on the floor, I'm going to lift you out of the tub. And the vast majority of the time, she turns around and splashes against the wall if she hasn't already done that. But if she does keep tossing the water on the floor, then I have no qualms about lifting her out of the tub and accepting whatever strong feelings she might have about that. Other research asks us to look beyond the immediate compliance that a behaviorist reinforcement can bring about. So things like saying, if you put your toys away, you can have a cookie, or punishing a child when he refuses to put his toys away. Because these tactics do work in the short term. But as we talked about in the Punished by Rewards episode, these tactics don't really help us to build the kind of relationship that we want to build with our children, and neither do they work in the long term. Instead, researchers have found that if parents play with a child for just a few minutes, letting the child be in control of the play session, so basically the parents take direction from the child and do whatever the child wants to do during the session, and then ask the child to put some toys away, the children almost invariably complied both during the experiment itself and also weeks after the experiment was over. And this impact was especially strong with children whose parents normally perceived them as difficult. Once again, this supports a key principle of RAI, the idea of what Magda Gerber, who founded it, called wants nothing quality time. So once something quality time is the idea that when you're trying to get something done, like changing a diaper or getting dressed, in other words, when you want cooperation from your child, then this is still quality time. But when there's no immediately pressing need, you can spend once nothing quality time with your child, doing whatever your child wants to do with no agenda on your part. This is such a core principle of RAI, and to find that scientific research links this to children cooperating with parents at other times feels very validating to me. Another researcher called this the development of the willing stance, which I see as sort of a flywheel of positive outcomes that once you start, it just keeps going. So early attachment to the parent promotes a child's trust in and positive orientation toward the parent. That positive orientation leads to a cycle of mutual cooperation that actually increases over time if you keep engaging in the child-dependent play. The parent provides supportive, adaptive care, and the child embraces and internalizes the parent's values. The parent gradually empowers the child to be an autonomous, positive, and active partner in socialization. Because that's really our ultimate goal, both in seeking cooperation and in parenting more generally, right? Yes, I mean, it's to make our lives easier and run just a bit more smoothly, but it's also to transmit our values to our children. It's to help our children understand that we're the kind of family who puts our things away when we're done using them, and that we help each other out, and that we respect each other's opinions. Because ultimately, our goal is for our children to do these things when we're not looking. When we send them out into the world, we want them to take responsibility for themselves and to help other people and to respect other people as well. As our children get older and move toward middle school, we need to start doing what psychologists call co-regulation, still keeping the guardrails around the child's behavior, but stepping back and letting the child make more of the moment-to-moment decisions. And if we've prepared them adequately by helping them to develop the skills they need to make these decisions when they're toddlers and preschoolers, then they'll be more successful in the world when they're middle schoolers and adolescents. And if we haven't, if we've controlled their behavior so they have to look to us every minute, then we haven't set them up for that success. Another study corroborated that we can achieve this outcome by finding that where mothers and preschoolers are mutually responsive, then the mothers have to use less power to elicit cooperation, and the children had internalized maternal values and rules to a greater extent. As children get to the teenage years, the effects of controlling parents become even more profound. Authoritarian parenting that promotes a relationship of responsiveness between the parent and child and a sense of give and take has been found to foster teenage children's healthy sense of autonomy, which in turn promoted better developmental outcomes.
Authoritarian
parenting has been linked to lower GPAs in white and Asian students, although not in African American and Hispanic students, and higher rates of dropping out of school than authoritarian parenting. On the flip side, an older study found that adolescents who have authoritative parents are more obedient and conform to the standards of adults, but have relatively poorer self-conceptions than other teenagers. And a more recent study found that when mothers use psychological control methods like manipulation, guilt, or passive aggression to control children in early adolescence, by mid-adolescence, these children were less able to assert their autonomy, both with their parents and with a close friend. I can imagine all kinds of chilling consequences ranging from receiving lower grades because the child's unwilling to speak up in class, to potentially horrific outcomes of not being able to say no to someone who's doing something to you that you don't want them to do. So sorry to end on a bit of a negative note, but I hope this exploration of how to get your child to do what you want him to do has been helpful. And I mean that in sort of a joking way, because as we've seen, the best thing to do is to set up a situation where your toddler or preschooler feels comfortable asserting her autonomy, but doesn't become defiant. I honestly didn't really know where it was going to end when I started researching, and I'm grateful to find the path I've been following seems to be setting the stage for as much compliance as one can reasonably expect from a toddler at the moment, while still allowing her the space she needs to develop her own thoughts and opinions. As always, you can find the references for this episode on the Your Parenting Mojo website. I'm trying a new thing and making my links a little bit more easy to find, so give it a try. You can go to yourparentingmojo.com/compliance and find the show notes and references for this episode. Thanks so much. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Your Parenting Mojo. Please subscribe, rate, and review the show on iTunes and sign up for our mailing list at yourparentingmojo.com to receive a free gift. 7 relationship-based strategies to support your children's development while making parenting just a little bit easier on you. For more respectful, research-based parenting ideas to help kids thrive, we'll see you next time on Your Parenting Mojo.